Possible in part by the U of I's Center for Advanced Study, whose Millercom 2005 lecture series presents Stereotypes of Jews in 20th Century Cinema by Omer Bartoff on Tuesday, August 31st at 7:30 p.m. on the third floor of the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. The lecture focuses on varying ways Jews have been represented in cinema as perpetrators, victims, heroes, and antiheroes. For more information, go to www.cas.uiuc.edu. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, with upcoming dance performances by the Versky Ukrainian National Dance Company, the world premiere of Ralph Lemon's Geography Trilogy Part 3, Come Home Charlie Patton, the St. Petersburg State Ballet Theater's production of Romeo and Juliet, and the Mark Morris Dance Group. For more information, contact the Krannert Center ticket office at 217-333-6280 or visit krannertcenter.com.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. In the first part of the program today, we'll be talking about identity theft, what it is, and what you can do to protect yourself. And our guest for the show is Stephen Baker. He is the Midwest Regional Director of the Federal Trade Commission. He's based in Chicago. As we talk in this first part of Focus, questions are certainly welcome. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. So if you're listening around Illinois, Indiana, and it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free line. Actually, if you happen to be listening on the Internet, as long as you're in the United States, you may use the toll-free line. So again, local, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Mr. Baker, hello.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
Great.
We appreciate you talking with us once again. I think now we've talked about this subject a couple of times over the past couple of years. It certainly hasn't gone away, and probably the problem continues to grow. I think, and when we've talked in the past, you have said that identity theft was one of the leading causes for complaints that you get at the Federal Trade Commission.
Well, the Federal Trade Commission is the main national consumer protection agency, collects consumer complaints. We actually pool them in from the Better Business Bureaus and the FBI and the Postal Inspection Service and a lot of other places. So we've got a database of complaints. And we have got about as many complaints about identity theft as everything else put together. You know, everything else, including telemarketing fraud, spam, used cars, hairspray problems, return products, whatever. Identity theft is equal to that. Mm-hmm. It is a huge problem.
And how many people are we talking about?
We are talking millions of people. One of the things, since we've talked last, the FTC said, okay, instead of just relying on these complaints, because we know they're flooding in, let's go out and really try to do some sort of professional survey and find out how much of a problem we've got. And last fall, the FTC did that and found that time that there were 14.6 million victims in the United States today, one out of 15 members of the adult population in the U.S. In the last year before we did the survey, found over 3.23 million victims had found a new account was opened or other fraud was committed in their names. That in that last year, businesses have lost $32.9 billion. And the consumers had spent $3.8 billion collectively to try to resolve these problems. So, I mean, we were found, of course, we were only getting a fraction of the people who have been victims of identity theft were actually complaining about it. So we've got a massive problem, and it continues to grow.
So what we're talking about here is people, criminals, who managed to get a hold of personal information about people, about individuals, and we could be talking about Social Security numbers, bank account numbers, credit card account numbers, other sorts of personal information. Then they're taking that and then using the name of the person from which this has been taken. Then they are doing things like they're buying things. They are carrying out other kinds of activities and doing all of that in the name of this individual from whom they have stolen this information.
Right. We had there was a good story here in Chicago not too terribly long ago. We had a blind street musician who performs on Upper Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago, and he went to the city to apply for his license, and they said, "Well, we can't renew your license. You've got too many parking tickets." He said, I don't have any parking tickets. I'm a blind street musician. I don't even have a car. So this went around very publicly for several days between him and the city, and the city insisting that he had to pay these tickets, and he insisting that, you know, he was blind and didn't have a car. And in Chicago, you don't know whether he really is blind or not, after all. But what eventually arose from it was that a nephew of his had stolen his identity, used it to get an automobile license, and had all sorts of unpaid parking tickets.
I guess the thing that people would right away imagine is that this happens when people's purses, wallets are stolen, that in a very direct way people are getting a hold of the physical things, driver's licenses, social security cards, credit cards, and that indeed can happen, but it's not the only way that it can happen. How do identity thieves go about doing what it is they do?
Well, that's one of the things we tried to take a look at and where people got hold of the information. Clearly, stolen purses and wallets are a good source. We used to be, of course, we were mainly interested in the cash on these things, but there's other ways now, too. We also have people getting people's information. Stolen mail is a very popular way of getting it. In other words, particularly in rural areas, identity thieves were, unfortunately, this is all too common, identity thieves will go out to the mailbox where the flag is up along a rural road and just take the outgoing mail. Now, that often has people's checks that they've written to things, utility bills, maybe Social Security numbers, a whole lot of different information in it. My understanding, in fact, is that a lot of the identity theft being done in rural areas is for people that are involved in methamphetamine labs, too. They need the identity theft. They steal the identities to help them get some money to buy methamphetamines or sometimes to disguise who they are to purchase the ingredients.
Mm-hmm. Well, that right away suggests a real serious problem, because I'm sure that people have this idea that the mailbox on the front of their house where the letter carrier leaves the stuff should be secure, and all kinds of documents come to us at our homes, bills that may have identification on them, the statements that we get from the bank, the statements that we get from the credit card company. Short of setting up a post office box to make sure that that doesn't come to your home, what can you do about that?
Well, the problem seems to be more associated with outgoing mail than incoming mail. Postal Inspection Service works on this pretty hard. They are a lot like the FBI, although they focus on mail things. The big thing consumers can do is not attach outgoing mail on their mailbox. You know, a lot of us used to just clip it to the mailbox so the letter carrier could pick it up, and sometimes it'd stay there for hours or maybe a couple days before it went out. But dropping that in an actual post box instead to mail it will make a big difference.
Also, things come to us in the mail that maybe has that kind of information on it. And one of the most problematic things, no doubt, is that all of the unsolicited applications for credit cards that
right.
so many of us get. And for a lot of people, their impulse might be just to throw it away, either throw it in the trash or to put it out. You know, if you have in your community, you have recycling pickup or whatever it is, you'd say, well, I don't want this. That's junk, that you put it out there. And that also can be a way for people to get that information, because literally identity thieves have done. They've gone through people's trash. They go through the recycling. They look for that kind of material.
Yes, they absolutely do. So there's a couple things people can do. I mean, first, don't put that sort of thing in the recycling bin, particularly in the recycling bin, because that's almost more open and available than the trash is sometimes. We do recommend shredders. There's lots of TV commercials on shredders anymore. The other possibility, certainly with these credit card offers, is if you don't want them, stop getting them. There's actually a toll-free number consumers can call if they want to stop credit card offers from coming, and that is 888-5-OPT-OUT, which is 888-567-8688. And industry folks tell us that if you do that, that will stop a lot of these credit card solicitations from coming in the first place. And I know a lot of people get a lot of credit card solicitations.
Yeah. Well, I've certainly had that same experience, and I think that after having talked to you the last time, I did that. And it works. It absolutely works, because I think that probably at my house I got at least one or two a week, and sometimes more. And I did not want them. And what I did was, as you suggest, because we do have a shredder, I would shred them up. But I decided, well, better not get them at all,
right,
in the first place. And that does work. Now, I think this is a thing, though, that periodically, don't you have to make this request again? It's good for maybe a couple of years, and then it runs out.
I don't know, to tell you the truth. This is a private operation, and I've not really checked into it too much. We recently came to our attention, and I figured on events like this, it'd be good to offer this, but I would certainly ask, if I was a consumer, how long this is good for, and whether you need to reconfirm it at some point.
Okay, so that's 888-567-8688.
Correct.
Right. Okay. So if people want to do that, it's a number they should call up. And I think, as I recall this, what you needed to do was you gave them your, I don't know, it was like name, address, maybe you had to give them your social security number, something like that. Just a few basic bits of information, and that was that.
Mm-hmm. There's also a way to stop other junk mail. I mean, most catalog kind of things, if consumers want to. And sometimes we find our mailboxes flooded. This will work with, of course, legitimate companies that would just as soon save the money for people who really don't want them. And that is to go to the Direct Marketing Association. And you can go to their website, which is www.the-dma.org, O-R-G, www.the-dma.org. If you register online, I think they charge you $5 if you send something into the mailing address they give you, it's free. But that also is effective in stopping a lot of junk mail for people that just want to be left alone.
Okay. We have a couple of callers, and we will get right to them. And perhaps I should introduce again our guest. We're talking with Stephen Baker. He is the Midwest Regional Director for the Federal Trade Commission. He is based in Chicago. We're talking about identity theft, and questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. First caller up is in Lovington, and that's line number one. Hello.
Hi, I may have too much larceny in my heart or something, but if I wanted to steal people's identity, why wouldn't I just go get a minimum wage job at Walmart and keep track of their receipts and ask them all for their Social Security number? And a lot of people give you that and be done with it.
Well, I think some of that happens, and I think what your point illustrates is that it's really important for businesses to keep track of what information they're collecting and to try to monitor employees that are corrupt. Fortunately, a lot of us are pretty honest, and I think the stores really make an effort, but they do try to monitor it. But these things do happen. There are, for example, sometimes waiters who've got something they call skimmers. You give them your credit card to pay for a meal. They run your credit card through that. It's about the size of a credit card or a deck of cards, and it captures your credit card number, saves it. They go ahead and run your credit card, you get your receipt, but somebody, dishonest waiter can sometimes collect a whole bunch of those over the course of a day. So it is a problem that exists out there, there are, of course, law enforcement efforts to try to deal with these skimming things, and we do try, there is law enforcement against people, but it can be a problem. And of course, the other thing, like, I think that goes back to your question is that people ought to be cautious about giving out their Social Security number. I really can't think of a good reason to be giving your Social Security number if you go to Walmart. And if I were at Walmart and they asked for it, I'd like to say, well, what do you need it for?
Well, so would I. But
yeah, okay.
It seems like they ask for it for a lot of silly things that evidently some people must give it to them for, because, you know, they ask for it way more than it's needed, I think. But
mm-hmm.
How is it a... thing that happens once in a while that people run your card twice and pocket the money, or is that just a mistake?
That's usually a mistake, and usually the advantage of a credit card is that you can charge back. If you've got a double charge on your credit card or something, you can go back to them, they'll remove it from your account, and you're not out of any money.
Right.
It's still a hassle, but it should deal with the problem.
Sure. Thanks.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks. I think the caller really does get at what I think is a problem, or perhaps has been a problem, and that is stores where you do business, particularly if you're writing a check, they want some kind of ID number to write on the check, Social Security number, driver's license number, and that. Again, these are the kind of numbers that you're suggesting people keep control of and not give out. I'm sure there probably was a time when people, maybe a fair number of people, actually had their Social Security number printed on their checks because so often something like that was requested. And I think now the standard advice is, no, don't do that. Don't even carry your Social Security card in your wallet, because you ought to keep a track of that number. But what do you do? Do you have any recourse if you go in a business and they want that kind of information? And if you don't want to give it, I mean, is your only choice either not to make the purchase and say, well, if you insist on that, then I'm leaving and taking my money with me?
Yeah, I would think that. Yeah, I think that is your choice, is to not do business with them if it gets down to that. A lot of the time, of course, the people that are manning the checking account, the registers, they have no idea. You know, they just know that it's policy that they collect these things. So usually requires talking to a supervisor of some sort. In my experience, for the most part, at least with checks, the driver's license number to at least help establish who you are so they can find you if it's a bad check is usually sufficient. I have not seen anybody asking for Social Security numbers. And things have gotten a lot better. I mean, most businesses and I think a lot of other institutions have stopped using Social Security numbers as a form of identification. It still happens some places. I'm astonished sometimes when I see it with some universities, even here in Illinois, that have required it, used it as an identification number. But it is getting better. But as you point out, people should be careful and should not print it on their checks, and they ought to certainly. If people are asking for too much information, you can't figure out why, ask them how come they need it.
Let's go to another caller here, line two, Champagne.
Hello, I've become neurotic about this. And one thing I don't do, and I don't know why I shouldn't do it, is you're supposed to have your credit report examined at least once a year. And am I correct on that?
Yes, we recommend that.
Is there a free service that it does this, or is there to make sure that you're not falling into a trap by having to give information you wouldn't otherwise want to give, that there are some services that provide a credit report copy at a nominal cost?
Well, there's several pieces to this. First, Congress has passed a law requiring that the credit reporting agencies give people a free copy of their credit report once a year. That we're working up implementing regulations for that, and that ought to be rolled out sometime in the next few months. But this is a big change for the credit reporting agencies, but they're going to be giving everybody an opportunity to get the credit report for free before too terribly much longer.
Okay.
There'll be a lot of press on that. Second, if somebody has pulled a credit report on you and denied credit or something like that, then they have to notify you that they have used your credit report and give you an opportunity to tell you that you can get a free copy of your credit report.
Okay.
In other words, if I apply for a credit card and they pull a credit report and say, gee, Steve's got awful credit, we're turning him down, they got to send me a letter in the mail that says, okay, we used your credit report, we denied your credit, you know, the credit report may have been a contributing factor, here's where you call to get a free copy of your credit report. Finally, since I don't want to give you too long an answer, I apologize, but I think we should probably get into some of the internet things too.
Yeah, I heard, for example, I was tempted to go into the website freecreditreport.com.
Well, the major credit reporting agencies do operate websites selling credit reports, but we've also seen spam emails that impersonate those,
mm-hmm.
that take you to a site, ask you for all your personal information to get a credit report, including mother's maiden name and those sorts of issues that the credit reporting agencies would never need. And then you press enter, and you get an error message, but they've stolen your identity.
Gotcha. That's what I was afraid of. Yeah.
So there are those sites. We have some free information on exactly that issue available on the FTC's website because we've worked with the credit reporting agencies. But the simple answer, if you're interested in getting a credit report, you look up one of these places online yourself Don't ever, ever, ever give any personal information and respond to an unsolicited email or spam. And that's, we'll come back to that one, I think, but that's a really important point.
Okay, one last question. I'm going to be quick because I know other callers are on the line. And that is, I eat out on a regular basis. I'm a bachelor. And I try to take this prophylactic measure. That is, I never leave my credit card receipt on the desk, on the table. I insist upon the waiter or waitress coming and delivering it to him or her. And yet you just raised a point that I've always had in the back of my mind. I haven't protected myself completely because a dishonest waiter or waitress could still take advantage of the situation and engage in identity theft. There's just no way to deal with this if you are using a credit card at a restaurant.
I don't think there really is too much. You can't follow them clear back to the machine all
right.
the time, unfortunately. As far as your receipts, though, the law has changed. It used to be, and unfortunately it still is sometimes, the credit card receipts are not supposed to have your whole credit card number.
Well, some still do that, and I bring it to their attention, saying the law requires that you have no more than the last four digits.
Mm-hmm.
But some people in this community, Champaign Urbana, some restaurants are still maybe they're still trying to wrap up the old system and they haven't moved to the new.
Right.
I was wondering, even if you have the situation where you have one of the last four digits, is there a way for somebody just to walk by, pick up your credit card if you leave it at the table, see your name on it, the last four digits, and still have a way to engage in a form of identity?
I don't think so. I don't think your name and last four digits are going to do it for them. I think they need more than that.
Okay.
So I think that if we get it to the point where everybody has this last four digits, then it's probably good of you and other people to bring this to the attention of businesses because that's going to encourage them to change over and that's going to protect all of us.
And until I just renewed my Illinois driver's license this past year, for 4 years, my Social Security number was on my Illinois driver's license. So I was carrying around my Social Security account number, which you were advised not to do, because it was on my Illinois driver's license.
Well, I know they've changed that over now. So
but they have changed that. But I found that to be incredibly difficult proposition.
Mm-hmm.
Let me continue my neurosis, and thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the call. Other folks who are listening, you are certainly welcome to call if you have questions. We're talking this morning about identity theft. Our guest is Stephen Baker. He's the Midwest Regional Director for the Federal Trade Commission. He's based in Chicago. And if you do have internet access and you're interested in information on this issue, a lot available there on the website of the Federal Trade Commission. And it's an easy URL. It's www.ftc.gov. And you just go there and you will see they have many different sorts of information. And this is one of them, one of the kinds of information they have. And among other things, you will find there information on the big credit bureaus, how the toll-free numbers to call to get credit reports, what their websites are. And so if you're interested in checking your credit, and as Stephen Baker said, the recommendation is that you do that once a year just to kind of see what it looks like. Because I think one of the things that people report is that when they have discovered that identity theft has occurred, that they've been a victim, some time may have passed. You know, this could happen to you, and it could take you some time to find out. And over that period of time, the person who has stolen your identity has the opportunity to do a lot of damage to your credit.
Right. Of course, people also use stolen identities to apply for jobs and to get apartment leases and other things like that. So it's not – so there are – people may have stolen your identity, be using your identity, and not necessarily have wrecked your credit, but still something you want to know. So getting a credit report is a good thing to do.
All right. Well, we have some other folks here who are listening. Let's go next to a caller, I believe, in Lafayette, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. When I get through, when I've written all the checks on my check pad, there are usually some deposit slips left over. Should I chop them up?
I would. They've got your account number on them.
Well, so do all my checks. And
you're talking about your, I presume the alternative is with your deposit slips, that you'd otherwise throw them in the trash.
Yeah.
Well, that's the sort of thing that I would, if you could, I would certainly shred or try to make sure people don't
but
get access to.
The same electronic numbers along the bottom of those are on every check I write and give away. What's the difference?
Well, your check is presumably going to a business somewhere, which is going to, you know, send those through the process, and then the checks will be destroyed or stored at the bank. So they will be in the hands of businesses who've got controls to do them. The risk you have with yours is that somebody pulls them out of the trash. Because, I mean, the checks you write to business would go through the mail. They don't go into your trash. And the people that are called, we call them dumpster divers, that are looking for personal information. With the checking account number, people can do a lot. One of the things a lot of people think is that nobody can pull money out of your checking account unless you sign a check. And that's not true. If you give somebody a checking account number over the telephone, they can debit your checking account. And what we've seen is actually our number one source of fraud today, telemarketing fraud. We call it advance fee loans. Typically, it's Canadians calling offering credit cards. You may not know they're Canadians. And claiming for people that do have bad credit and say for a $300 fee, we can get your credit card. This is only available for people with valid checking accounts, and we need you to verify your checking account number for us. Mm-hmm. People give out their checking account number thinking it's just verifying, not realizing the money can be withdrawn from their account. So you need to protect those checking account numbers, too, if you can.
Okay. Now, for those of us without computers, what recourse, where can we write to prevent the junk mail?
I don't have it's the Direct Marketing Association. They're in Washington, D.C. Let me see if I can find an actual address. I would actually think if you call Directory Assistance in Washington, D.C., 1-202-555-1212, they should be able to give you the number of the Direct Marketing Association. It's a huge operation. Okay. And that ought to get it for you, I would think.
All right. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go again to a caller here. We have somebody here, line number one in Fairbury. Hello.
Good morning. I'm enjoying your show very much this morning. I just wanted to relate an experience that just irritated me to death, because like one of your other callers, I'm very upset about the way people are always asking me for my Social Security number. I last week had to have surgery, very minor surgery, and in 2 days I talked to 8 different people in the hospital system who wanted my Social Security number, a credit card, and my driver's license. All 8 of those people Xeroxed these 3 items and put them in a file. 8 different files, mind you. That just irritated me even further. But without my Social Security number, they were not going to do the surgery. They wouldn't even register me in the hospital. In Champaign-Urbana, although I don't live there now, so it may have changed, but the last time I lived in Champaign-Urbana, there is not a merchant in campus town anywhere where you can write a check without putting your Social Security number on it.
Hmm.
You know, and it's getting to... Identity theft has got to be easy. It really has to be easy. I own a small business, and I had a woman email me, put her Social Security number and her credit card number in the email, and said, please ship me this stuff. I can't believe that people still do this. And they get very upset with me, the merchants do, when I say, I'm sorry, I'm not giving you my Social Security number. And they get so upset that I've just got to where I just make up a number, write it on the check. I'll probably never find my hospital records because I did that 8 different times.
Well, that does seem excessive, and there are some, obviously, laws on protecting medical privacy that have gone into effect the last year or two. There are some old horror stories of hospitals taking old paper records and just putting them in garbage bags and dumping them on the street.
Yeah.
But I think they're getting the message, and the more we all communicate to businesses and institutions the need to be careful, that they will be more careful. The one thing with Social Security numbers, I guess I ought to say, is there is a reason why they do need Social Security numbers sometimes. The main thing is you've got the credit reporting agencies obviously have credit reports on millions and millions and millions of people, and they're trying to keep those accurate and avoid mixing up, say, 2 people in the same apartment building that are both Pete Smith.
Understandable.
And the way they keep them straight is they index them all by Social Security number. And that avoids errors, because there are a lot of errors. And if they screw you up and get you mixed up with somebody with bad credit, then that can really have an adverse effect on you.
Well, that's perfectly understandable. But why would a merchant need my Social Security number? They can't do the merchants can't do anything with my Social Security number on a check. I mean, they can trace me all kinds of ways if I bounce the check, but they're not going to be needing my Social Security number.
I don't know why they would need your Social Security number instead of a driver's license either. Maybe one of the other callers would have some idea.
They almost never ask for a driver's license in Champaign-Urbana. Mm. They ask for your Social Security number.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the university uses the Social Security number as the student ID.
Do they still?
Yes. And while I was working at the university, I received inter-office mail with my Social Security number on the outside of the envelope. But we don't ever give it to anybody.
Well, I would really hope that the university would change over. I know some of the other Illinois universities. I've actually talked to the chancellor of one Chicago higher educational institution who's promised to try to change their system over.
Most universities, I've taken classes at other universities too, they all ask you for a Social Security number to be used as your student ID, but they will, if you insist, make up a number for you.
Well, you actually
have to do the insisting.
Well, if I was a student, I would certainly insist, and if it was, I was the and I would certainly encourage the universities to change that practice.
Okay, I'm really enjoying your show this morning.
All right, thank you for the call.
I
have just to respond to the question that the earlier caller had. If you don't have internet access, how it is you get to the Direct Mail Association to ask them, please don't send me junk mail? And I have gone to their website, and there is an address here that they say if you send them a postcard or letter with your name, your address, and signature to the Mail Preference Service, Direct Marketing Association, Post Office Box 643, Carmel, New York, 15012-0643, that will do it. You can also do it online if you do have the internet access. So, and it says that it's free. I guess it's okay. Is it okay to send them your signature? I suppose that's
sure.
That's
yeah.
Okay. So basically, they just want your name, your address, your signature. Mail Preference Service, Direct Marketing Association, Post Office Box 643, Carmel, Carmel, New York, 15012-0643. And then if you do have the internet access, you can do it online. If you actually want to do it online, apparently they charge you money, but you can send them. I don't quite understand this. I guess you can send them the information online, and then it's by mail somehow. But if you actually register online, it costs money. I don't get that. But anyway, there is a way to do it online and not have to pay money. So that's one thing people might think about if you're just tired of getting lots of junk mail. That should help. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. That's our number here. We're talking about identity theft, and our guest is Stephen Baker. He's Midwest Regional Director for the Federal Trade Commission. We have someone here calling from Kankakee on a cell phone, line number 2. Hello.
Hello, and good morning.
Yes.
I have actually 2 questions, and I'll probably ask them and then hang up. But the first one is that the man who called before this last caller mentioned that printing out the whole number when you go to any merchant, whether it's a restaurant or department store or whatever, printing out the whole number on the receipt, did he say that was illegal? And if so, what do you do when you do go to a merchant and they do print out the full number? And my second question is that do credit card companies have any screening process for the people that work for them? Because, of course, credit card company workers have all of your information, including your mother's maiden name and Social Security number. So I'm just curious about that, and I'll hang up.
Okay. Well.
Well, there is a. I know the law has changed, and they're only supposed to be printing the last 4 digits. This is not something that the Federal Trade Commission enforces, so I don't know the particulars of it. I'm sure there's some sort of changeover process going on. In the meantime, I mean, the advice, what I do, I would hope other people do, is be especially cautious on making sure you take your copy of the receipt with you so you can throw it away in an appropriate place and not leave it laying around. So you just got to be a little bit more cautious. And it doesn't hurt to mention, I don't think, to a restaurant or whatever, that when are you going to be changing over? That would give them, if they know their customers care, that would give them some incentive to go ahead with a probably more updated printers or electronic devices. They need to do that. Let's see. The second part of your question.
Well,
was,
they're concerned about what kind of, the caller was concerned about what kind of screening is done for people who go to work at credit card companies who have access to, after all of that information.
Well, it isn't just credit card companies. It's all sorts of businesses that have your personal information. Earlier caller mentioned hospitals. Your employer is going to have personnel records. They're going to contain a lot of personal information on you. The Congress and the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act required that all businesses have some sort of safeguards to protect their information and some sort of plan. And they required us to adopt a safeguards rule, which we did. And all businesses are required to maintain the privacy of consumers' personal information and exercise some controls on it. That's not perfect, but it is there, and I think most businesses are more and more aware of. It's horribly embarrassing for them when somebody steals information from them, identity theft. Some of the calls may require just a couple of months ago where America Online, AOL, fired a guy who had stolen, I believe, 25 million email addresses to sell to spammers. Well, obviously, precisely the same thing can happen, probably does happen, with ID theft. So there really is a duty on businesses to maintain the integrity and the privacy of the information they collect and to make sure it's disposed of properly when they no longer need it. Can I mention phishing for just a second?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, one of the new things that we're finding these days with identity thieves is the way they're getting people's personal information is we're volunteering it. Either there's websites and other things or even diners where you enter a contest or a sweepstakes and you to win a prize. And you give them a lot of personal information for those. And, of course, most of those are totally bogus, and at worst, they're nothing but identity thieves. So something that flashes up on your screen when you're on the web, you know, your 50,000th visitor, enter this information to get a prize, I wouldn't do it. Or if you're at the Jiffy Lube or a diner and there's some sort of thing to win a Florida vacation or a Ford Explorer, those are usually the leads to be sold to telemarketers. But the other thing that's going on now is that the spammers are phishing. They will send you a spam that looks like it's from eBay and say, gee, we're having problems with your account. There's been a temporary computer glitch. We respect your privacy, so we want to make sure that we got the right number. Please give us your bank account number again so we can make sure our records are complete. And people fill those out. They look just like an eBay form or an AOL form or a Citibank form, and they send you sometimes click through to websites that look like real websites, but they're fakes. So this is a really growing problem. And the short answer, because we've all received these, is if you get no legitimate business will ever ask you by email to give them personal information. And that's an important point, even though it's fairly concise, because not eBay, not your bank, not the federal government, nobody is going to send you an email at home asking you to respond with your personal information. If you got a question, contact the government or the credit card company or whoever yourself rather than replying to the email.
Okay. We have a number of other callers here, and we'll get back to the phones. And next is someone listening in Indiana on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello. A couple quick things. In terms of the still using the older electronics for the entire Social Security number, it should just make a rule or, you know, Congress should do something that when the technology moves over, everybody has to do it within, like, 6 months. Secondly, you haven't mentioned, I don't think, except just very subtly, that most of this identity theft is done by people who go out and look for it, and they pass it on up the line. They don't actually go. I mean, some of these kids in New York City don't even have computers to do the stealing of the pocketbooks and stuff. That all gets funneled up somewhere else, and I haven't seen much action on the, you know, on the federal level to get at those people. And I guess, thirdly, since criminals usually very intelligent people, when especially dealing with computers. You mentioned phishing. Well, that sense is old hat. what's going to be next and what kind of things are put out so that people will know something about it. I got one of those things you're talking about from eBay, and they had the colors right this time. A lot of times in the past, they didn't have the colors right, or they only used two,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody wants to, you know, somebody wants to make some side money at the university. A programmer could, you know, make himself a lot of money if he were willing to take the chance, because that all can be duplicated. And in a sense, you know, there's a reverse firewalls, too. So there's a lot of ways to cover everything up. And since this is the way the economy is, you know, is going, you know, something needs to be done much more stringent than what's done now. Some of these kids that do this stuff, they just get a slap on the wrist. And, you know, that's not going to give a message out to some of this generation. Not at all.
Well, you do it is... We don't have criminal jurisdiction at the Federal Trade Commission. We work a lot with the Secret Service and with the FBI and the Postal Inspection Service and use our database to help them find cases they can prosecute. There are some prosecutions. The fishing folks, for example, are as good an example as any. There have been some prosecuted, but they're very, very difficult to find. As you point out, they pass the information along. Sometimes these credit card numbers are swapped over the Internet. Some of this stuff is actually originating from Eastern Europe or former Soviet provinces that have broken out, and it is very difficult to track these things down and to figure out who's responsible for them. So one of the predictions for the future, I suppose, I mean, one, phishing is going to get worse. It already is worse. It is getting worse and worse every month. The statistics are on a really sharp slope going up, so we all need to watch out for that because we're all going to be victimized for it. Second, more and more of this sort of crime is going international, and particularly on consumer protection type issues, there hasn't had to be so much international cooperation. Law enforcement community is learning a lot. We're working a lot with the Canadians ourselves, but the law enforcement agencies are going to have to work with each other, and there's going to have to be more efforts devoted to the long-distance crime. The old police model, of course, was a crime where you have the victim and the perpetrator and the witnesses are all in the same town. And when they're spread out, maybe across those people, across the United States or maybe the world, the other thing that comes into play, even if you find people, is the difficulty, the cost of flying in witnesses to do it. And those have a real effect sometimes on how much these things are prosecuted. But I agree with you that this is going to this is a big law enforcement problem, and it's going to require more resources. And I think a lot of us are working real hard to try to figure out how to do that. But it's probably going to take some more resources. It really is, because this is something most people just aren't organized to deal with. And I think we're going to have to really treat it as something separate and devote some separate resources to it.
Let's go next to a caller in Mattoon, line 3. Hello.
Hi. First of all, I want to tell you how much I appreciate a program like this, because it is a growing problem, and it's nice to see so many agencies and businesses, rather than trying to minimize what's going on, step up to the plate and say, look, these are the dangers inherent, and here's what you need to do to take care of it. So it's a nice approach. I specifically wanted to address, though, the lady comments a few callers back about the Social Security cards in the universities. University of Illinois no longer requires Social Security number and doesn't use it for IDs. I'm a grad student and a research assistant at the U of I and for 5 years, and it's not been required. You have to use it to register, but it's not used for any identification purposes whatsoever. Eastern Illinois University, which I'm also affiliated with, has just recently eliminated the Social Security number on student ID cards, although there are instances where they still use it for identification purposes. And as far as merchants, it's been quite a few years ago that Illinois passed a law where merchants cannot require a Social Security number to complete a transaction. They can ask you for your last 4 digits, but that's strictly voluntary, and they cannot deny you a transaction because you won't part with your Social Security number. So that information was, you know, really needed to be updated, I think.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you calling. I thought that was what you say about the U of I. I was pretty sure that was true but I wasn't so sure that I wanted to say that on the air.
Yeah.
That, in fact, that we don't do that anymore here. But we, certainly in the past, we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they all did at one time, and, you know, but gradually that's moved away from that, because I used to work at the bookstore at Eastern, and, you know, that was a rule at Eastern. You had to provide your Social Security number on a check, and anymore you just, and what she said about Campus Town when I was a student at U of I in the late 60s, early 70s, that was true, but not anymore, and no merchant can require it, and if they do, well, then, again, you know, you just, first of all, they're a violation of state law, and second of all, you know, do you choose to do business with a company that's going to operate like that?
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate
it. All right, thank you.
All right, let's go on to Belgium over by Danville, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Comment and a question here, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
First comment is, you can keep your anonymity very easily if you just use good old cash. You know, it's amazing. You know, you just use that, nobody causes problems. But the question I really wanted, and most of my transactions are in cash, you know, checks to the things like the, you know, the power company and stuff. But the question I have is, invariably, every day I get several notices from Citibank or this or that or something. We'd like to get you another credit card, sir. I don't have any, but we want another one. And at the bottom of each and every one of these applications, there's a series of numbers and little bars that identifies each and every person that they mailed this to. Is there any way they can get identification from that to cause you problems?
You mean Citibank?
Or any?
Could somebody taking that information from Citibank? No, I'm sure not. I'm sure that's an internal.
Oh, you don't have to worry about tearing them up and disposing of them properly, because you know there's a lot of there's a lot of little barcodes and a lot of little numbers that are on all those applications. And your name is on it, and right below that, there's a little barcode that has information in it, I'm sure.
I've never heard of that being an issue.
Then I'm not going to have to worry about that anymore, am I?
Okay. Although, there's, as we said, Erlano, if you were listening earlier in the program, there is a toll-free number that you can call and ask them, give them your information, and then if you don't want to get those credit card applications in the mail, if you don't want the credit cards, you can stop that. And I've done it myself, and it works.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I'll have to go to the archives and find this number.
If you get a paper and pen sometime before the end, I'll give it again.
Thank you.
So you can take it down. Let's go to Charleston, line four, for another caller here. Line four. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I had two things regarding the Social Security number. I've tried to do a good job of keeping my Social Security number from giving it out, and it works mostly, but I had two comments. When I apply for a fishing license, I'm required to give that, or a hunting license, because they're saying they're using it for this child support laws, etc., which I appreciate trying to get deadbeat dads. But yet, when you go to driver's license, they don't require it there. I don't understand the Congress's intent just to go after people who fish and hunt, that they're bad citizens and need a Social Security number. And the second point, with the University of Illinois, I appreciate they don't take it for student ID, but I have asked to not have that used on my insurance-type thing and request a different number, and they said, no, we can't do it because the bureaucracy in Springfield, Central Management, doesn't let us do it. And it seems like we need another federal agency like yourselves to maybe talk with the state of Illinois to get some sense into giving a person the option to have a different number so they don't have to use it for their medical records, because, like the woman said earlier.
Well, there is a need for Social Security numbers sometimes just to kind of keep people straight so files don't get mixed up, but we hope it's not more than necessary and that those numbers, when they are turned over, are used appropriately and the information protected. In terms of, I think the laws are in transition a lot of places. I think that, you know, clearly we talked about credit card receipts and the last four numbers. Congress is passing more laws, the states are passing more laws, and businesses are changing their own practices as they reveal it. So, I mean, you pointed out an inconsistency in the use of driver's license numbers, Social Security numbers for things, and I guess I don't have a good answer for you other than to say that I think this process is moving along, but it isn't done yet, and hopefully some of these protections will be in place.
Well, my comment was Department of Workforce Development, they're specifically targeting people who fish and hunt, because they are going to look for deadbeat dads who are behind on their child support claims. But yet they don't go after people who drive, which are much more numerous than those people fish and hunt.
And yeah, that must be. Do you think that that's, Mr. Baker, you think that that's an Illinois state, a matter of Illinois state law?
No, federal.
Exactly.
Oh, that is federal law?
Yeah. I've fished in several different states, and they all require
it. They all do that. Oh. Uh-huh.
Well, then it may be that, of course, the driver's license issuing is a state law.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, in terms of the inconsistencies, in terms of collecting child support and providing the information so they can do that, I'm just not familiar with it. I'm sorry. But I certainly see your point, and there's more that needs to be done, and it's good that people are recognizing some of these issues because legislatures, I know, are interested. A lot of legislatures are interested. If there's things they can do, they're going to help protect people's personal information.
Yeah, I know I'm going to have to jump in here at this point because we have pretty much used our time, and I really need to apologize to the callers we cannot take. They are on hold. We're here at the end of the time. One more time, though, I do want to mention for that the man in Belgium and anybody else who is interested in calling this number to stop credit card applications. I do want to give that again, and that is 888-567-8688. You can do that. And then if you're interested in getting more information about identity theft and what you can do to protect yourself, including the information on the credit bureaus, you can get all that by going to the website of the Federal Trade Commission, www.ftc.gov. And you can get that information there. Our guest this morning, Stephen Baker. He's Midwest Regional Director for Federal Trade Commission in Chicago. And Mr. Baker, thanks very much for talking to us.
It's been a pleasure.
And we appreciate you giving us your time. Our program here, Focus 580, made possible in part with support from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Programs here on the station are also made possible with support from Symphonia de Camera. Season tickets are now available for the 2004-2005 season. This season's performances feature the Beaux-Arts Trio's Golden Anniversary, String Serenade with Pacifica Quartet, American Classics with Rudolf Hocken and David Harris, Much Ado About Mozart, and An Evening of Romance featuring pianist Ian Hobson. For more information about season tickets, call 333-6280. A little later today on the Afternoon Magazine, journalist Evan Wright spent 2 months with a unit of Marines assigned to the task of racing into Iraq ahead of American battle forces. He's written a book about the Iraq War and the Marine unit nicknamed First Suicide Battalion. The title of his book is Generation Kill. Coming up today on the Afternoon Magazine, an archive interview with Evan Wright. That'll be following the 1 o'clock news. The program itself gets underway at noon here on AM 580. The host, Celeste Quinn. In the next hour of this program, we'll be doing a little history of science as we talk with Eric Lax about the development of penicillin. He's written a book. It's titled The Mold on Dr. Florey's Coat. More on that in the next hour. Right now, an update on the market, so stay tuned.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Illinois Farm Bureau and IFB's AgriVisor Market Advisory Service. AgriVisor offers market information and advice.